65,000 to 70,000 people every single year directly. I feel like we make a difference in people's lives. I wish people knew more about us.
Neela Mukherjee Lakhal, president and CEO of EAC Network, a leading social service organization in New York City and Long Island. With over 25 years of experience in the nonprofit sector, Neela has dedicated her career to serving vulnerable communities through innovative programs and services.
I had always said one day I was going to come back to EAC and that I was going to be the CEO.
And here you are.
I had gotten recruited to the American Red Cross. You know, I wasn't looking to move on, but it was hard to say no to the American Red Cross.
That is the organization that we all think of on a national level.
People like to share stories or create ideas about what the American Red Cross is, but I lived it.
Let's touch on a subject that maybe is a little taboo, but I find that conflict is what allows us to have conversations that move the needle forward.
Absolutely.
Welcome to another episode of the Real Mentors Podcast. As you know, REAL stands for Real Examples Altering Lives. And today I've got an amazing guest who's going to join us in studio today, tell us about her career, and show our audience how they can make impact in the world too. Today's guest is Neela Mukherjee Lakhal of EAC Network here in Long Island. Neela, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm super happy to be here.
Yes, it's been a long time coming.
Yes, it has.
But exactly on time.
I love that. I agree 100%.
I'm a go with the flow kind of guy, and I think you're much of the same. So glad you joined us today. I want to talk first about EAC. This is a tremendous network doing amazing, impactful things in the community. Disenfranchised communities more so than others. And I was completely unaware of your existence until I ran into one of your colleagues and now my friend, Bob Strickhoff. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about EAC.
Sure. So EAC is a very large social service organization. While we are headquartered here on Long Island, our footprint includes all five boroughs, Rockland County, and Nassau and Suffolk counties. And so our work covers a pretty broad array of programs and services. We have five main pillars. We work with seniors and provide nutrition. So we have senior centers and provide meals on wheels. We have our children and youth programs where we have a child advocacy center in Suffolk County. And we work with minor victims of human trafficking. The child advocacy center is where children who have been abused come for a multidisciplinary investigation and care. So it's really meant to streamline the services so a child is not continuously re-traumatized telling their story over and over again. We have our community and family programs. So, you know, if you get in a little trouble and you have to do community service, you would come to us and we would help you find a place. But we also do things like provide driver safety programs in schools. We help people install car seats in their cars. We work with local precincts to make sure families who can't afford a car seat are getting a car seat and not a ticket. Right. And then our biggest bucket really is in the criminal justice and behavioral health space. We do alternatives to incarceration. We work in all the diversion courts. We do offender reentry programs. We have a health home program, which is helping people who have justice impacted backgrounds and multiple health needs, ensuring that they get the proper care that they need. And then finally, woven through everything is our vocational services, really helping people get back on track, get education, find purpose, a reason to wake up every day and to move forward. And then as a part of our community programs, I forgot to mention our Long Island Dispute Resolution Center, which makes mediation services available to the community in a handful of different spaces. So it's big, it's vast. The thread that really weaves through everything is helping people navigate really complicated systems, right? And so we handhold people, we care for people, we have a guardianship program where if you are unable to care for yourself or at risk for exploitation, we would become your guardian and ensure you're getting the care you need and all your commitments are being met. And so it really is an amazing organization. We touch about 65,000 to 70,000 people every single year directly. Wow. We have about 450 staff members across the downstate area. And it really is an amazing network of programs that has really touched so many lives. And, you know, it makes sense that you haven't heard about us because our work is very direct, right? And it is, people are generally referred to us from other agencies or other entities. But I really, I wish people knew more about us, right?
Well, that's what we're aiming to do today, is shine a light on the work you're doing in the community. Because I think what's different about EAC as opposed to your American Red Cross is there's branding behind the American Red Cross, right, whereas it seems EAC is woven into the fabric of the system,
right,
so that we can prevent people from sliding through the cracks.
That's exactly.
If I don't, you know,
that's
forgive
exactly
me for
right.
using that cliche. But
no, it's true.
I mean, you're going to catch them when they're at their most vulnerable and give them a hand to say, hey, there is something. There are people here to help you. How long have you been part of the EAC network yourself?
So I am in my role as president and CEO for, it'll be 4 years in April, but I actually worked at EAC about 20 years ago. It was my first job on Long Island, just under 20 years ago.
Wow.
So I had worked in the city for many years, and I moved out here, and then I moved even further out east. And so I was looking for a place on Long Island that reflected the values that were important to me, the mission-serving values. And at that time, there were only a handful of places that I could identify that spoke to me, that really connected with what I believed in. And EAC was where I landed. And I was here for a couple of years at the time, and then had kids, and my career path sort of shifted a little bit. You know, all with the same mission, but you
right.
know,
I
moved
change
along,
yep. from time to time.
And when this opportunity opened up, I had always said one day I was going to come back to EAC and that I was going to be the CEO. And
here you are.
I manifested it.
That speaks to the importance of vision. I mean,
absolutely.
which is what this show is all about. It's telling people that if you have the capacity or the bravery and the courage to dream and to follow through on those
yeah.
things, I want to show you that it's completely possible. Bob, who we mentioned earlier, talked about him and Steve Ballone being 8 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And wanting to be locally yeah. elected officials. And as a kid from the projects in the Bronx, I had the biggest laugh. But it was a testament to visualization, dreaming,
absolutely.
Manifestation, and putting in the work, people. Don't forget
100%.
That part. You can't look in a mirror and manifest a Lamborghini. You know, that's what we're up against with the social media culture, unfortunately,
yeah,
these days.
I say that you have to be an active participant in your life, right? You cannot be passive. You have to, if you have a vision, if you have a goal, the universe is listening.
It is.
But it's not just going to hand you things. You have to work for it. And I tell people I'm a hustler, right? I work hard. I've always worked hard. And I've always, had something I was working towards.
Right.
Right? And I feel like I am where I want to be. I love my work. I love the organization. I love our mission. I feel like we do incredible things. I feel like we make a difference in people's lives. And for me personally, you know, I always need a challenge. And every day there are new challenges.
What are some of the challenges when leading such a large organization with such a vast reach that you've encountered?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many. I would say some of the things that first pop into my mind are ensuring that you know, I can trust that our services, our mission delivery is 100%, but I have to make sure that our staff, our employees feel seen, heard, cared for. So that's important. I have to respond to many, many stakeholders, right? We have our funders, we have our communities, we have our partners, we have our government partners, and again, we have our staff, our volunteers, our board. So ensuring that the work that we're doing is meeting the expectations that everyone has for us, that's a big challenge. Certainly funding, right? We're always up against whatever challenges the universe throws at us, whether it is cuts in government funding, whether it is an economic downturn and we have to really pieced things together because our donor base may have changed. And then, of course, staying on top of trends and making sure that the programs that we have are relevant, right? That they are actually speaking to the needs of our communities and that they're not outdated and serving, you know, a different kind of environment, right? Our environment is always changing. So being on top of all of those things, working with our partners, working with my peers to understand what's important. I would also say building relationships with our peers, both, you know, other individuals, but other organizations, and making sure we have good relationships, making sure we're partnering, making sure that we are meeting the needs of our communities, that we're fighting for what's important, but that we are working together.
You talked about a lot, and the thing that stands out to me is relationships. Mm-hmm. Relationship capital is the most valuable resource that we have to level up in any aspect of our life.
100%.
And I was fortunate enough to kind of say to myself, oh, I wanted to start a nonprofit. And then I started doing the research as to how that comes about. Oh, that's not me. There's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of politicking. There's a lot of stuff that as an entrepreneur coming from a space of you want to do something, just go make it happen versus playing that game. I was admittedly not deterred, but I just said, all right, let's go another route. And I was fortunate enough to be introduced to you and Bob and the whole EAC team through Dio Salma Melgar, who's part of the board there at EAC. And I am a proponent of putting yourself next to the people that have been doing the work. You've been doing this work for about 25 years. I want to keep the focus on you. EAC is an amazing network, but it is led by who I consider to be an amazing person. And that's the reason you're able to rally the troops and lead efficiently and effectively. It's because you have experience and then some. Tell us about your beginnings in the nonprofit industry. You talked about working 20 years ago for EAC, but I also saw you founded and it's a community organization named Girls Inc. here on the island.
Yeah. So first of all, it's actually closer to 30 years that I've been in this industry.
Okay.
And I started. I went to college thinking I was going to go to law school, and then I ended up working at a homeless youth shelter, and I discovered social work. I didn't know, and I realized, oh no, this is what I meant. This is what I meant when I said I wanted to go to law school, because if I went to go to law school, I would have been doing this kind of work, public service, right?
Okay.
Not, I wasn't ever going to go into corporate.
So this was always in your heart?
It was always in my heart, right? My parents who immigrated here from India, and my parents who have literally lived the American dream, were like, wait a minute, you're supposed to be a lawyer or a doctor. And I was like, nope, I'm going to be a social worker.
How was that received?
It was challenging, but my parents are my biggest cheerleaders. And so they went with it. And I worked at a youth shelter. I was in Maine at the time. I came back to the metropolitan area. I lived in Jersey. I was working in the city. I worked for another organization working with very street-involved young people in the city. Street Work Project, part of Safe Horizon, a really incredible program organization. Went to graduate school, got my MSW, went back to graduate school, got an MPA. I loved clinical work. I was a clinician for a while, but really I'm a better administrator. The clinical work was incredible and powerful, but also was really sort of breaking me down a bit. And I'm a better administrator. I started working at EAC. I had some life things that happened and I had to pause for a bit on my career. And when I came back, I got brought on to a board of directors for a chapter of a national organization. The board had been founded and they really needed some direction. There was a woman hired to be the executive director. She didn't stay. She was there for a couple of months. She left, and then I came in, and I call myself the accidental executive director. but Girls Inc., it is an incredible organization, and it's really about what you talk about so much. It's about mentorship. It's about providing avenues for young girls to see the actual scope of opportunities that are out there, okay. right? It's to remove limits for these girls and to introduce them to opportunities, to mentors, and to really help them carve out a path for themselves. So I had moved out to Long Island in about 2002, I think, and I didn't really find my tribe until around that time.
Okay.
I met people who were just incredible, who understood that work, who understood that mission, but also who understood service to the community, right? They weren't all social workers, they weren't all in public service, but they did understand service. Right. So Girls Inc. Was where I spent a few years and grew the organization, really built a foundation. Today, that organization continues to thrive under amazing leadership, a great board over there. I had gotten recruited to the American Red Cross, actually. Right. And at the time, you know, I wasn't looking to move on, but I realized that sometimes you just have to take a leap. And right. I told everybody I was a little bit Girls Inking myself, right? It was hard to say no to the American Red Cross.
Of course. And that is the organization that we all think of on a national level when we think,
it's an amazing place. It's an amazing organization. And I know, you know, people like to share stories or, you know, create ideas about what the American Red Cross is, but I lived it. It's right. an amazing organization. I went out to multiple disaster responses. I met hundreds, if not thousands, thousands of volunteers. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you, these are incredible human beings. These are people with full, complete day jobs, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and they still give so much of themselves to the service of others. Right. The American Red Cross was an amazing opportunity for me. I learned so much. I was the CEO for the Long Island chapter. I met so many people. I learned so much. And then when the opportunity at EAC came about, I realized for me, what was important was local service. I could have done other things with the American Red Cross. And it was, you know, it's an amazing organization, but I wasn't leaving.
No, listen, you.
I love New York.
Strike me as someone who needs to always grow.
I do.
And that is a hallmark of any great leader. Leaders do not stay comfortable. Leaders do not stay the same. They force themselves to grow. And by default, we force the people around us to grow. And I want to talk about service. Why service? When did this light bulb go off in your life? What age were you? What did you see? Who were the people early on that inspired you to dedicate your life to service?
Oh my God, you're gonna make me cry, but it's been my entire life, but it was my parents, right? I told you my parents are immigrants. My dad came here with literally a handful of dollars in his pocket, mm-hmm. stayed at a YMCA, found a community wow. of other Indian immigrants who took him in. He built a career one by one, brought our family members over. You know, he came over during a time where the United States was bringing people, you know, with certain skill sets.
Of course.
He one by one sponsored our family members to come over here, sacrificed a lot. Both of my parents did. I'm an only child. They sacrificed so that I could have anything that I needed.
Right.
And a lot of what I wanted. Maybe not a lot of what I wanted, but, you know.
Enough
of what I wanted.
You do that with your kids now.
I do, right. But my parents always believed in service. They were always a part of organizations that were taking care of other people. My parents have always, I don't come from a wealthy family, right. but whatever they had, my parents were so generous. They would say no to nobody, to nothing. They believed if they had something, they should share it, they should give it. And so that was just sort of what I grew up. That was the environment I grew up in, right? And so there wasn't like a light switch that said, oh, sir, now is, you know, this is what right. you want to do. It was just always what I wanted to do.
And always what you saw growing up. And Indian culture is such a beautiful culture. It's so inwardly focused, but at the same time community-based and family-structured. And I think, as someone of, you know, Dominican descent, someone who was born to the, you know, the a parent from the Dominican Republic, who also immigrated here and wasn't able to attain the American dream as a single mom, but I sure did. And, you know, when we come over from other countries and immigrate to the United States, that is the hope. You Yep. pour into your children, you give them the opportunity. And I think, let's touch on a subject that maybe is a little taboo, but I find that conflict is what allows us to have conversations that move the needle forward.
Absolutely.
In communities of color, here in the New York City metropolitan area, Long Island is no different, there is a lack of that familial structure. Now, you didn't have everything growing up, but you had a mom, you had a dad, there was food on the table. You know, I had a mom, I didn't have a dad. And there was an imbalance there for years in my life, if not decades, and I was fortunate enough to overcome that. Are we seeing that in these communities of color, predominantly Hispanic and African American? Also, this applies to anybody who's of limited means. But is there usually a parent who's not in the house?
I think that our family structures today look so different, right? There's not really a... We can't really talk about what's traditional and anymore.
Let me correct myself by saying mom and dad. Two parents.
Right,
because
two parents.
I'm a believer that
Whatever,
that's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine, too. And I'm supportive of any structure. But a cohesive unit, I guess I should say.
But I would say, I think even with that, I mean, I have friends, people I've worked with, known, who have decided to have children on their own, right?
Okay.
And so I would say that the family structure today looks very different and can be very effective no matter what.
Correct.
But what I would say is the most important thing is community, right? Because
okay.
It takes a village.
Yes,
I believe that 150%. And so if you have what used to be considered a traditional household, right? Two-parent household, great. If you are a one-parent household, a single-parent household, great. You know what's important no matter what? That you have community. That you have a community of people around you. If you have a community of services, of entities who are there to support you. Because even a two-parent household faces enormous struggles. I mean, I think a lot today about how hard it is for a two-income household to afford rent here in New York. That's crazy.
And they're both out working all day.
They're both out working all day. It's not like they're waiting. I mean, they're working and they still can't afford rent. And so this is where community is so important. And so I think that, you know, maybe I'm taking your question to the other, to a different
Please.
Perspective, but I think about how important it is to be able to circle a family and to say, we got you.
Right.
We're here for you. You know, you do what you can do and we're going to help you. We're going to still help you get to the finish line. If you working and you doing what you're doing is not enough, we're going to help you get there. I think in terms of family structure, again, whether you have two parents or a single parent, if you have two parents working a lot, those kids are still growing up with whom?
Right.
They need community. They need their village. They need the people who are there to take care of them. I moved out here.
The neighbors, the schools. Right. Organizations like your own.
I moved out here. I didn't have a friend base out here. I had my husband's family out here, but we were all sort of scattered. And I'm so grateful that I was able to find a village of people who became my people, who were there for me to help me take care of my kids when I needed to go to work, who were there to help me when I was having a hard time. My husband is a now retired police officer. He worked obscene hours all the time.
Shifts, few times
so
a week.
I was a single parent, you know, I wasn't. I don't wanna diminish what, you know, single parent households go through, but I was alone at home a lot with two kids. Trying to figure things out. And I'm grateful that I had a village, right? I'm also grateful that I did have a partner who, even though he was working a lot, was also somebody I could call and depend on. But I think that that's so important. Community. Community is key, I think.
You know, it's a complex conversation because, again, the traditional family structure is it's very different than what it used to be. And I'm all for it. I just have seen that, you know, when there's an unhealthy family structure, I should have started with. And I always tell kids, you know, even I got to speak to some of your kids that that were in trouble with the system and they got a second chance. And I was blessed enough to speak to them. And I was straight with them. And I just told them, listen, the truth is you probably have to dig yourself out of a deeper hole than some of the kids who have grown up in comfort. But what you're not realizing now is that's making you a stronger person.
Absolutely.
So when you do have to compete with others who haven't faced that adversity, you're going to be better prepared for it.
I mean, if I may, exactly what you just said, right? You met with these kids. You know what they need? They need mentors. Right. They need people who care about them. They need people who can see the possibilities for them and who are willing to step up and help open doors for them, help them see what is possible, and help them to not define themselves by the experiences that they grew up in, right? You can manifest your own destiny, right? I believe that 500 million percent. Yeah. But again, you can't do it alone. Right. And, you know, what you have done with our kids has been so impactful, so meaningful for them individually, for them as a group, and for us as an organization to know that we have people like you who step up and will sacrifice your own time, your own other priorities or responsibilities to be there for our kids. Right. is so paramount.
Well, it just so happens that we're on the last day of the month of National Mentoring Month. And even though this won't air until later, I want to stay on the subject of mentoring and mentorship, because it truly is that. That is a window into the possibilities of the future, particularly with younger adults who are struggling, who don't have that family dynamic or community dynamic that we talked about that lifts them to a better place. How can we help recruit more people that have had some level of success? Any, because there may be somebody who's working 40, 50 hours a week and has their kids at home and has their marital issues and has financial issues, but they still have value to add. And they're unaware of the fact that when you do things like this and pour into others, the universe responds.
Absolutely.
How can we help recruit more people that are maybe unaware or on the cusp and just need a little push to say, your life matters and you can change the lives of others?
I wish I had the actual answer for that. We are always looking for mentors, and mentorship can cross a spectrum, right? It can be a little of your time and it can be a lot of your time. There's opportunities for all kinds of engagement. I think that we do it by talking about it, by talking about our own service, right? So when you are doing great things with our kids, for you to be able to tell your community, your peers, your colleagues about how it made you feel, that is how we excite other people about this work. For me, you know, I always try to tell our board members, our partners, our supporters that not only do I want you to do what you're doing, I want you to tell everybody what you're doing. Right. Tell everybody what you're doing. Because if they see how good it makes you feel, right? If they see the fulfillment you, and it really, it's true, right?
Yeah, it is.
It is real fulfillment. That is how we get the word out, right? And these are formal mentorships, the mentorship opportunities, but there are so many informal mentorship opportunities, right? I imagine you, I know I have benefited from having amazing mentors in my life. I like to think that I have been a mentor to a lot of people on my journey, informally as well as formally, right? I was a big sister many years ago when I was in college, and I had this kid I was working with, working with is not the right word choice, right? He was my little brother, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it was so awesome, right? I was a college student. I kind of had a lot of time, but I didn't have that much time. And it was one of my favorite parts of my week, my time was time spent with him.
I just signed up recently and finished the paperwork because I'm terrible about answering my emails on time. So I'm going to be mentoring a couple of young adults, 13 and 17, I believe, were the two young men that were presented to me. And I can't wait. And for anybody out there listening who has the potential to be a mentor, even if you have a small little itch, the truth of it is I only have to commit to 2 hours a month with EAC. I know that I can provide more, and if need be, I will. But for anybody out there who's contemplating this and doubting their free time, I know darn well you spend more than 2 hours a month watching Netflix TV shows, and this will make you feel much better. So it's not a huge time commitment. It's a matter of effort. And I think, well, I know I'm going to do my best, and I do it on social media, and I just try to spread as much knowledge and information and just good vibes.
Yeah.
For the cheesy cliche that is, to let people know that you can do this too. And absolutely, you have value too. If you come from an environment where it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows, and you came out the other side with the lessons that made you a stronger, better human being, and you found some kind of consistency in life, and you're able to pay your bills, and they're on auto pay, and all these things that you didn't see growing up, simple little things,
yep,
that we take for granted. I now challenge you to take it a step further, because I know there's probably an empty feeling inside of there that says, okay, now what?
Now what? You know, if I may just throw a little plug in.
Please.
So I'm so happy that you are going to be mentoring two of our kids. We have so many different kinds of mentorship opportunities. We have mentorship opportunities with kids who are in foster care, kids who've been involved in the system, with young people who are victims of human trafficking. We have a CASA program, which is helping kids whose families are involved in the courts, and they need somebody who is their person, who is their advocate, their CASA volunteers. Just so many great opportunities. I always go back to the quote of, you're not going to go broke from giving, right? And that's it's speaking to financial support. That quote specifically was sort of addressing that. But giving, right, of your time is so, it gives you so much energy,
right,
to go back and do all the other things that you do, right? It gives you the energy to go back and do more at work, do more with your family, do more with your friend circle, do more with your other hobbies, right? Because it is energizing. Right. It's an energizing experience to be giving to a young person and seeing them,
right,
blossom with that attention and that care. It shows you how much impact you can really have in the world.
And as one of my mentors, Tony Robbins, loves to say, giving is living. And I really didn't understand that until I started giving wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
So, you know, first and foremost for me, it was building a family dynamic that I didn't have growing up. And I poured into them. I poured into my wife and my marriage and my children. And that's beautiful. But me as a dynamic person, I have more. That's not enough for me. And I just went on this mission. And I'm like, who can I help? How fast can I help them? How much can I help them? Can I mentor? Sure, I got 4 hours a month for these two kids. Not a problem. Need a speaking engagement? Sure, not a problem. And I don't do it with any thought of getting anything in return other than hopefully just touching one or two of those kids. And it can't be overstated that your time can literally change not only that person's life, but everyone to come in the legacy of that person, especially if they're missing that mentor.
Yeah.
So who were some of your early mentors in the nonprofit field that inspired you?
I love that question. One of my first ones was when I worked at that youth shelter in Maine. To this day, she is one of my best friends. Her name is Lori Foster.
Hey, Lori.
Hey, Lori. She's maybe a year older than me, but she just was so smart and so insightful and so direct. And she really just forced me to look at myself, to challenge myself, to do more. And we were good friends, and she was my boss, but she had higher expectations of me than she probably had of maybe some of the other staff because she saw something in me. So she was one. When I was at Girls Inc., the women who brought me in as the first, as the executive director at the time, they were incredible. And there are a couple of them, specifically Angelina Rouse and Ellen Libida, who just saw something in me, supported me, encouraged me. Another woman, Marion Conway, who wasn't on my board, but is sort of a nonprofit guru here on Long Island. She's incredible and amazing. She also, to this day, is one of my friends and mentors, and has just been somebody I turn to for guidance, support, insight, encouragement, right? And just also grounding me sometimes when the world feels crazy. There have been so many. So many incredible people along my journey. When I was at the Red Cross, I had Josh Lockwood, who was the person I reported up to in the organization. And he was just an incredible sounding board, an incredible idea generator, right? And he is another person who believed in all the possibilities for all of us, right? I have two board chairs now, and I have a board of directors, many of whom I'm very, very close to. And they are my friends, but they are my mentors. And when I'm using the word mentor a little bit loosely, right? I've had some great formal relationships with people, but I'm so grateful to have had so many champions, right? So many people who believe. We don't agree on all the same things.
Right.
But what we do agree on is what's ahead, right? What is possible for me personally, as well as for the vision that we share, right? For the mission of serving people, serving our communities, having a better community for our neighbors, for our children, right? Building something. I'm very grateful to have a community of people around me that is forward thinking.
You mentioned disagreeing. We're in a time where if you don't agree with somebody, you kind of just don't want to deal with them. Now, I say that lightly because there's an algorithm that forces you into the corners of your belief system. But in person, in an organization, on a board, for instance, you are going to have different personalities, different value systems, different belief systems. How important do you think it is to be able to disagree with somebody and yet and still be open to learning from that person and taking in their perspective?
I cannot say enough the importance of diversity. And when I say diversity in this context right now, diversity of thought.
Right.
Right. Listen, I don't always want to hear things that I don't agree with.
Right.
Like I don't want to, but I force myself to. Because I also know how important it is for me to grow and learn. I'm not always right, first of all, right? I know this about myself. I like to think I'm always right. I do tell my family I'm always right. But I'm not always right. My husband and I don't agree on a lot of things, right?
No, say it ain't so. It's the secret to any good marriage.
But we learn from each other, right?
Amen.
I think that he learns from me. I know I learn from him. In my world, my bigger world, I appreciate hearing different points of view, even when it's hard for me. I will force myself to sit through it, right? And process it, right? Because maybe I will still stick to what I believe in. Maybe it will shift a bit. Maybe I will change my way of thinking. But it is important, I think, that we are able to hear each other and to understand. I mean, these differences come from different experiences, right?
Absolutely.
I cannot be of good service if I cannot understand other people's experiences,
right?
We don't have to land in the same place. We don't have to vote the same way. We don't have to think the same way. But it's important that I can understand and respect your experience, right? That is yours. Right. It's your experience. It's not my job to judge it. It's not my job to assess it. It is my job to accept. It is my responsibility to accept that your experience is your experience. And I have to be able to sit with you sitting with it.
Yeah, you've got to be diplomatic about it. I think that comes from a certain level of confidence in oneself. You believe the things that you believe to be true, but you also have the open-mindedness to know that what you know is limited. And I have never grown more than when I put myself in circles of people that look nothing like me or speak nothing like where I came from, have no experience. And the beauty of that is, I'll give you an example. I'm in this mastermind that is very high level and very exclusive. It's invitation only. And I was blessed enough to get into this group. And, you know, it is costly, and I'm blessed enough to be able to pay for it. When I got in that room, prior to it, you know, I was a little nervous because I didn't know where I was going to rank on this scale. But there is no measuring stick.
There's no measuring.
I think Demi Moore just said something beautiful at the Golden Globes the other day. It's like, you are enough. All you have to do is put away the measuring stick. And I think when it comes to being right and being wrong, it's a complete reflection of our own insecurities and our egos, which is also insecurity. But any great leader needs to put that BS aside and understand that people from all walks of life, all belief systems, all colors, all shapes, all sizes, all ethnicities, all cultures have something to bring to the table. So absolutely diversity is necessary. America is one of the most diverse nations,
absolutely,
if not the most diverse nation on the planet. But unfortunately, we often forget that we were once on a plane to get here with a dream and a few dollars in our pocket. Mm-hmm. And we just stand on these belief systems that we have, and we get on our soapbox, and we refuse to take in new information. And that's where we stagnate.
I think that it's so important that we create space for everybody to share who they are, where they come from, what their experience is, their lens, how they view the world. And we learn from each other. I don't have to agree with you.
Right.
It's fine. I don't have to agree with you. But I can say, that's what you think. This is what I think. When it comes to how I make decisions, I'm going to make decisions based on my belief system. I'm sure going to try to educate people to my experience, to my perspective. But I'm A-okay, for the most part, listening to you try and educate me, right? Sure. And I think that that's how we grow as a people, as a community, as a country. And I think that if we put blocks in place to not value the different experiences people have, the diversity of experience, the diversity of thought, if we don't allow clear pathways for that, then we limit our own ability, or we limit our own scope of possibilities for greatness.
I believe that the talent pool is far greater when we don't have any biases as to who's coming into the fold. I just wanted to circle back to leadership. Your leadership has been honed over the better part of now 3 decades in this nonprofit and community-based, impact-based space, both here in Long Island, but also, you know, the greater Northeast. Where do you see your leadership taking EAC in the immediate future and maybe even a little bit further out?
Right now, my priority is to navigate sort of our environment at this time, right? To make sure that we are able to continue to provide the services that are needed, and that the people who need our services will get them. In terms of what my leadership is really focused on, it is about ensuring that our communities, both internal and external, feel cared for, making sure that we are holding fast to our values, sort of steadying our ship despite the turbulence around us is my immediate term. in the long term, my hope is that we continue to grow. And I don't mean grow wider, like provide more different kinds of services, but to provide a deeper level of service to our communities, to make sure that people know about EAC Network, that they see us, that they recognize the value that we provide. It is my hope that as time goes on, our voice is heard, that we're able to utilize the platform we have as a large organization doing important work with really important partners, helping people really survive.
Right.
That we're able to use our voice effectively to make change, to advocate for what's important for our communities, and to get resources directly to where they're needed. And so I think that my role is mostly about providing a steadying presence and hopefully a vision for what's ahead. I'm grateful. I mean, I can't say that without acknowledging I have a great, amazing board of directors, but I have a really fantastic leadership team. Our leadership team is dedicated. They are tremendous. They are so, so smart, right? They help me see the forest for the trees every single day. And then on top of that, I would say my personal board of advisors, if you will, the mentors who are right around me, who give me insight and guidance. But it is with those partners, I hope to create a vision that is seen and felt and heard mostly by our communities and our staff, our employees, but then hopefully for the community at large to understand how important all the pieces of our work really are and how beneficial they are to you, to your siblings, to your kids, to your neighbors, to the teachers in your schools, to your to all your partners. We are serving people across downstate New York with incredible services that make life a little bit more manageable.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you come up in poverty, no matter where you're from, it's survival. Yes. You don't really know what living's like. You don't take vacations. And, you know, I want to touch on one last thing, because anytime there's an administration shift, there's a lot of fear on the opposing side. And here in downstate New York, there's probably a lot of fear that cuts are going to come. Is this something in your atmosphere that we're seeing right now?
Absolutely. I mean, we are, you know, we don't know what's ahead. We're trying to stay a step ahead so that we can prepare.
Right.
My North Star is mission delivery, right? My North Star is making sure that the people who need my services, not my, our agency's services, will be able to access them.
Right.
And so I have to stay focused on that. It's really hard. The environment is turbulent, and it's changing literally hour by hour. And so trying to stay ahead of that, trying to stay confident in who we are, what we're doing, and our ability to survive and thrive despite all of that, it's hard.
Absolutely. If it were easy, everybody would be able to do it.
Yeah.
My one piece of unsolicited advice for you and the organization, I heard a yogi once say to Mike Tyson, of all people, when, you know, he talked about, you know, I'm afraid. And he goes, well, fear is your inability to control your thoughts. You're either focused on something that happened in the past, or you're focused on something that has yet to happen in the future. And I think that's what we're seeing now from day one. And I think we see it every day. And I think if we turn off the news and we have conversations with our fellow human beings, it would just be so much brighter. And while that sounds a little whimsical, I know you do face real threats, because if $1 million goes missing from the budget, that is going to have an adverse effect, a direct
Absolutely.
Effect on people that are just surviving and counting on your services. What's the approach to fundraising for EAC? Is it mostly governmental funding through grants, foundations? Is there private sector money? What's the mix there? What's the payer mix on that?
So while it's a mix of all of it, the primary source of our funding is government contracts. We are contracted to provide services that the government cannot provide.
By the
directly.
State or by the federal
all
government?
All of it.
Okay.
Local, state, federal.
Okay.
All layers, city, all layers of it. And so the threats that are out there right now are very real for us. And they are critical for us. And so we are in a place of trying to balance, trying to advocate, and trying to ensure that we do what we need to do to make sure, like I said, the services get delivered, right? That's my North Star. So much of our work is, I mean, listen, this is downstate New York. Our communities are diverse. They just are, right? And so in many ways, doing the work that is meaningful to our communities is ingrained, is built in. I trust that we're going to be able to weather this storm and that we're going to be able to continue to do what we need to do. I just need our partners. I need our elected officials. I need our advocates to tell our story, right? To make sure that people understand the really deep impact that EAC Network is having on our neighbors, on our families, right?
Making the community a safer place.
Making our community a safer place. And I am certainly looking to our corporate and our donor base to step up for us as we navigate these challenges.
And coming from the private sector, coming from the entrepreneurial space, that was my drive. It was like, there's way too much dependency on the political system to fund this. And we're just in a spiteful time where you're either one way or you're the other. And common sense seems to go out the window. But I think there's always private sector help available. Maybe just needs a different approach or a new set of lenses to go after those people, those money, those organizations that are willing to help and put their name on it, and less dependency on that. And it just harkens back to my own personal belief. This has nothing to do with Neela's belief, but I believe that no one's coming to save you, despite all the beautiful things that EAC does, and I'm putting my foot in my mouth because they are coming to save a lot of people. But when we become so dependent on that, that's when we fail.
It is, you know, what is the phrase? A rising tide lifts all ships, right? Yep. And I have always said this. I believe that if the people around you are doing well, if you can help the people around you to do well, you will do well, right? And so I think that our commitment to service, our commitment to philanthropy, our commitment to community is about recognizing that when the people around you do well, you will also do well, right?
Absolutely.
And it is important to be a part of lifting each other up. It is important to be a part of giving back, to supporting each other, to helping everybody around us do well. The better everyone else is doing, the better I'm going to do.
Right. Now, tell our audience how they can help, how they can find out more information about EAC and become involved. And then please don't forget to throw in those mentorship programs, because I think there's so many people out there that qualify. They just don't consider themselves to be qualified.
I love it. So the first thing that you can do is visit our website, www.eac-network.org. You can visit us on any of our social media sites at EACnet. You can find us on LinkedIn. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. Let me start by saying there are so many ways to get involved and to support this organization, to support your communities by getting, whether it's volunteering, whether it's donating, whether it is joining our board of directors, whether it's building a partnership with us in some way, shape, or form. Our mentoring and volunteer opportunities are so many, but I'll focus on the mentoring ones right now because that's what we're really here to talk about today. We have mentorship opportunities with our kids who are in our Chance to Advance program, in our diversion programs, working with minor victims of human trafficking. And then, of course, our CASA program, which is working with kids whose families are involved in the justice system in some way, shape, or form. And these young people need somebody to hang out with them, to be their advocate, to be their words of encouragement, to be the angel on their shoulder to say, you got this. And really, that's what all of our mentors do. That's what all of these opportunities are about. We have volunteer opportunities to help people who are coming out of incarceration. We have volunteer opportunities to help our seniors, to make sure they're getting fed, to make sure that they are not isolated during these really difficult times. And there are projects that you, your kids can do on your own separately that are going to help generate resources and awareness for the work that's happening. So you can visit our website, reach out to us, contact us. You can DM us and we will get back to you, connect you, and find a way for you to be a part of our community.
Well, there you have it. Thank you so much to Neela for coming in today, sharing her story, sharing the EAC organization's mission and how you can get involved. As always, thank you for tuning in to the Real Mentors Podcast. And as always, let's get it.